Good morning and welcome, everyone, to Live Dharma Sunday. This is Reverend Koyo Kubose here. I'm glad you joined us in telephone and cyberspace land. You know, the Midwest was hit with a pretty severe winter, but I think they've turned the corner. And, you know, spring comes a little bit later in the severe winter areas in the north and so forth than in the more southern areas. So it'll be a while yet, not for like us in California. We could really feel the warm springtime coming. And although I'm sure it's all relative, the real warm days are still to come for those that had a severe winter. I mention this because today's guest for Giving a Dharma Glimpse is James Morford of Temperance, Michigan. And James is perhaps one of the longest, Reverend Gyomei Kubose's disciples. He could probably tell us when he first started to come to BTC, the Buddhist Temple of Chicago. Must have been in the early 70s when they started. My father was one of the pioneers in starting a small meditation group outside of the regular traditional, because in the Jodo Shinshu denomination, all meditation was a real no-no for a long time. They saw that as too much of a self power rather than other power, practice. But now it's very common. They have a lot of Zen Shin sanghas, and a lot of Shin Buddhist temples have early Sunday morning quiet time. They don't do it for the same motivation or purpose as, say, traditional Zen meditation, but they had their quiet, reflective time. But that came much later. My father started one in the early 70s, and I think Jim was instrumental in helping to start that. And I always remember he went on a trip to Japan with my father and told a story about how he learned how to ring that big bell. You know, a lot of temples have a bell hanging outside, and they have a big wooden log striker hanging with ropes, and you swing it and hit the bell. And I always remember his story about that. And I'd like to take the opportunity to say, I wanted to ask Jim whether he had any other experiences with Reverend Gyomei Kubose or with his teachings that particularly impacted him, and maybe he could share some of those in his remarks today, in addition to his Dharma Glimpse. So, for today's Dharma Glimpse, James Morford.
Yeah, thank you very much, Reverend Koyo, and I didn't know exactly what my introduction was going to be like this morning, and had been sort of puzzling over that, as well as being involved and having the chance to do a Dharma Glimpse. So, thank you for that introduction. And it was the late 1960s that I first went to the temple in Chicago, and while I am a lay minister, I thought I'd mention that I'm what we call grandfathered in. So I didn't go through the program and the study that a lot of the folks that have done this are doing. Coming to the temple was one of the major things in my life, which I didn't really have much of an idea where it would go, but it's been quite an experience. So with that, I'll give what I had kind of prepared as a Dharma glimpse, which is something that I call the Okie Dokie philosophy. And this is something that I worked out quite a few years ago when I was doing one of the we'd do a little Dharma talk when I was the timekeeper, and we sort of traded around being the timekeeper in Jikido at the meditation sessions. So one time I thought, well, you know, I'll do something a little bit different, and the Okie Dokie philosophy is goes something like this. The word Oki is the Japanese spelling of Oki, O-K-I, and it stands for oneness, karma, and impermanence. Oneness is the principle that life is a shared experience. It's not everybody is the same. And this this idea that what we do affects everybody else, and what other people do affect us, is a very important thing that that Buddhism teaches, and is something that we talked about at the temple a lot. Then karma. Karma is a law like gravity. It's the law of cause and effect. And actually, those two phrases are all is exactly the way I remember hearing about karma from Reverend Guillaume. That is, certain actions have certain effects. Furthermore, we need to remember that our actions, speech, and even our thoughts live forever. And I'll say that again. Our actions, speech, and thoughts live forever. You know, normally Buddhists don't talk about forever very much, but I've thought about that quite a bit and bring it up with other people, and I think that's something we should consider. Then I is for impermanence. Impermanence is the realization that came to the Buddha in his enlightenment. And it's talked about in like the Mahaprajnaparamita Sutra. And I'm looking at one of the books, the Mahaprajnaparamita Hridaya Sutra. And it's available from the Kubose Dharma Legacy. You might. But this is one of the important things that in the sutra it says there is no thing as such. And that's one of the chants that we like to do at meditation. Everything is in constant change. Trouble is caused when we try to grasp hold of things. Now, okay, so that's the Oki and the Okie Dokie. The Doki is a little bit different. In fact, I'm not real sure even how to spell it. Maybe it rhymes with hokey, I don't know. But the idea is that there's kind of a lightheartedness and a way of having fun. Or to put another way, it's to put a positive attitude and to have a positive attitude in our life. We all need a positive attitude. And in fact, we might even say faith. A religion is thought of as a faith. Very interesting. And normally we don't talk about faith in Buddhism, but I think having a positive attitude is very important, and is a part of Buddhism. And and I've got a little story that I'm going to tell about how I see the positive aspect of Buddhism. Here in Michigan, there aren't any Jodo Shinshu temples, and so Linda and I go to a Christian church, and one of the Sundays there's a man who's speaking is basically a friend, a nice man, intelligent man, and he says Buddhism is a negative religion. And when I heard that, I sort of said, what? I'm listening to this. But then, as I thought further, I realized that he's talking about the Four Noble Truths. I mean, the first noble truth is everyone suffers. And so, if you were researching about Buddhism for the first time, you probably wouldn't come across the first noble truth, everyone suffers. But then I'm saying, wait a minute, we don't have the one noble truth, we have the four noble truths. And the first noble truth is everyone suffers. The second noble truth is suffering has definite causes. And the third noble truth is that causes of suffering can be overcome. And then the fourth noble truth is the Eightfold Path. And I could probably do the Eightfold Path if I worked at it. Some days are better than others, but all of us that are, you know, involved in Buddhism have a basic understanding. I think that's one of the as I said, one of the basic understandings of Buddhism. And so that basically is the positive aspect that I see in the Buddhist religion, which is really built in. How could a religion be any more positive than to teach the ways to overcome suffering? And I think of Buddhism in that way, and certainly has been in my life. So that's the okie-dokie philosophy, and it's something that I like to call and bring up when I have a chance. And it helps me in my discussions with the various folks and organizations that we're involved in here in Michigan, including the Multi-Faith Council in Northwest Ohio and things like that. And it's also an interesting and good thing to remind me about the practice. So I thank the Kuboseis for their wonderful organization and their website, and it's really nice to get to visit with Koyo and Adrian again. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Jim. And I might mention, indeed, when we were first setting out our lay ministry study program to kick it off, we inducted a select group of longtime Reverend Jomei Kubose disciples or students. And, you know, people that had been associated with him and with the temple and so forth for, you know, over 20 years or so. And they had taken leadership positions in organizations and so forth. So we had honorary lay minister inductions, and James was part of this group that I did it to kick off the program. And it celebrates our rich heritage and tradition. And also, he mentioned that in Temperance, Michigan, where he lives, and his wife Linda, I think it's kind of a nice story that he, how he moved there from Chicago. His wife is from Temperance, and that's why he's living there. But they hooked up later in life, after they both went through their first married life phases, and now they're in their they must have been early 60s of age, and they used to be high school sweethearts. So, 40 years later, get in contact, and that's a beautiful thing. And I also thought about, he happens to be living in Temperance, Michigan, Temperance, and that word has a strong association for me, not because of the Temperance movement, but because my mother, when she was growing up in the Fowler, town of Fowler in Central California, lived on a farm on Temperance Avenue. And this farm was one of the sort of the root physical places in our family history. My grandparents on my mother's side were, that was their farm. My grandparents had three children. My Uncle Kay was the oldest. Then came my mom, Minnie, and then the last son was George. And they had 40 acres of grapes or raisins, 9570 South Temperance. This was a place that my brother spent some time in as a young toddler. This is a place where, when I was going to school in college at Berkeley, for all the holidays, Thanksgiving and winter holidays and so forth, take the drive down 3-4 hours and spend time with the cousins. It was that I didn't know the other side of my family's grandparents on my father's side. So this was the only grandparents I knew, and we were very close. When I first went out to college, I took the train out from Chicago to Berkeley. I get off the train, and there's my grandparents. When I got engaged to get married, my grandfather, he felt the responsibility to be the family representative for the Kobosa side. And you know how a farm, it's the land. There's a strong thing about the physical locale or the spot. Very special spot. And it's still there. The original house is not there. They put up a remodel of the house, but this was where my mom grew up. She passed away in 2002. Uncle George passed away, the youngest sibling, soon after that. But Uncle Kay, the oldest, lasted the longest. And he just passed away last week at the age of 96. And he was still at home. His mind was still sound. He didn't go into a coma, or he wasn't suffering from cancer or anything, in physical pain. Of course, it's all relative, but and he was conscious, and he could communicate, up until the day before he passed away in his sleep. And before, and that day before, all his children and relatives were surrounding his bed, and he looked around and he saw them all. And what a way to go. And hospice was involved, and they were talking about that the next day they were going to make arrangements for him to be moved to the hospice locale. But as his one of his son said, "Hey, Dad, it's okay to go now, you know." And so he did. And he never wanted to go into a nursing home or a hospice facility, and he didn't have to. Passing away at home is a real something special. And then to be aware that the loved ones are all around you, I said, wow. As I said, you know, sometimes, you know, one of my cousins, Uncle Kay, had four children, and one of the sons, Earl, is living there and on the farm there, and we go over there, and, you know, every June was Uncle Kay's birthday. And the last 3-4 years, he would always be saying, you know, this is my last birthday. And he was so fortunate that he had so many last birthdays, you know. But this was the place where my father used to come and court my mom. My father was in Oakland, the Bay Area, and he would come down, make that 4 or 5 hour drive or whatever in the early 30s, and they made him crank the ice cream machine, he said. So I guess the karmic roots, the causes and effects, and during at his service, I mentioned the two eyes of Buddhism, the two eyes that Buddhists look out at the world. And this is kind of a play on words, because the two eyes are impermanence and interdependency. Both start with the letter I, but I say, hey, these are the two eyes of Buddhism. And these are the gifts, the teachings that Uncle Kay leaves us with. You know, of course, the teaching of impermanence is felt very strongly by the family when a loved one passes away. But a funeral is a time when family comes together, really comes together, and it really shows the interconnectedness and the sharing of life together. It's a celebration of, you know, a long life, rich life. And there's a beauty and richness because of the impermanence. And there's also the Buddhist immortality there, as was alluded to in James's remarks about karma. Lives forever. You know, once something has happened, it is forever, and it keeps going. It keeps going. And one's relationship with loved ones is not over when they're physically gone, their body's gone. You know, there's how do you separate out your life from their life? There's a oneness there that, you know, is part of the eternalness is beyond time, you know. No change as such, or no death as such, only one eternal change. Wow, hard to wrap our mind around that. That's some deep fertilizer there. Food for thought. But the two eyes, I was thinking about that, and some of our current lay minister students, sometimes they start to mention that. They say, oh, as Reverend Coyle says, the two eyes of Buddhism, and, you know, when they internalize and personalize and that's what the Dharma is all about. When someone's talking about, the Dharma talk is about one's own experience. It's not talking about Buddhism. Okay, a scholar could talk about Buddhism, but a Dharma talk is always about personal experience of the teachings. And when you hear someone's giving a Dharma talk, they're talking about their own, that person's speaker's own personal experience. But for the listener, it's a Dharma talk actually only if the listener internalizes and personalizes and relates the teachings to his or her own life. It's not, oh, that's interesting, or that's a nice story about somebody else. Oh, great teaching requires great listening. You see? So, that's something to keep in mind, because a lot of times when you celebrate religious observances like Buddha's birth or enlightenment or whatever, you're not just honoring an event, someone, you know, great teacher's event, historical event, if it's not one's own spiritual birth or commitment toward the path. Then those holidays don't have any real spiritual significance at all. You know, it's about somebody else, some other time, some other place. But no, it's always right now. It's always right now. So that's all for today's broadcast. I thank James Morford for joining with us. I thank you for calling in. And as always, I conclude with, have a very, very beautiful right now.